Texas, America, the world. Mark Pankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Greg Felton of Vancouver. Greg is the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. That is a Dandelion Books publication. Greg has been chatting with a caller, Ramsey, in Canada about a whole host of things related to Zionism and Israel and propaganda and this whole issue of the Holocaust industry. We've been chatting in recent minutes a little bit about Norman Finkelstein's book, which Greg has read and which Ramsey has read, which I have not read and would like to. That is entitled The Holocaust Industry. Dr. Finkelstein, much like Mearsheimer and Walt that we've been chatting about this morning, is a target of an Israeli lobby that does not want people questioning the official orthodoxy as it relates to Holocaust ideology, Zionism, and American foreign policy. Greg Ramsey was making the point before the break that only about 10% of the Jews who fled Germany in the wake of what happened there ended up in Palestine, and that 80% of the total number of Jews who were in Palestine after the war were there before the beginning of the of World War II. What do you make of that?
Okay, well, that's information that I don't have. I mean, I know that after World War II, or during the war, after the war, only 20% maximum of all Jews wanted to go to Palestine. The vast majority wanted to stay where they were, or to emigrate. And there's a famous quote from Ben-Gurion that says, in effect, if I thought I could save all the children of Israel, of the Jewish children of Europe by allowing them to emigrate, or I could save only half of them by forcing them to go to Palestine, I regret that I would have to say I would choose the latter. Because the Zionist Jews throughout the history of World War II collaborated with the Nazis quite openly. And in fact, Adolf Eichmann at his trial, when he was kidnapped by the Israelis and brought back to Israel for trial, he was quite clear about how eager the Zionists were to collaborate with the Nazis and to sacrifice the interests of the of other Jews. I mean, the most Jews wanted nothing to do with the Zionists, and these were the people that the Zionists sold out so they could get their own people out of Europe. Because Hitler and the Zionists had the same objective, and that was to rid Europe of its Jewish population. And that is the great unprosecuted war crime of the 20th century that has never been discussed really in any sort of substantive manner in the United States or anywhere for that matter. If anyone who brings it up, like Dr. Finkelstein or Mearsheimer and Walt talking about the Israel lobby in America, all of this is immediately silenced, is shut down. It is rubbished because the United States now, again, is, as I've said, is essentially an extension of Israel's self-interest. And, you know, we have the sad scenario where we can't discuss this topic, but it's going to be discussed because the more people come home dead from Iraq or psychologically wounded, the more that our banking system is put into turmoil because of the subprime mortgage lending and credit card lending, someone's going to have to ask, well, why did this happen? And all the fingers are going to come pointing back at Israel. And we're going to have, I think the final chapter of World War II is going to be played out now, something like 60-odd years after the fact. And the result of it is going to be that all our history books are going to have to be rewritten. Because much of what we know about the Holocaust is propaganda. And that propaganda is what we're defending now with the likes of the censorship of Mearsheimer and Walt.
We'll be back with Greg Felton and with our caller. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
This is Mark Dantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Greg Felton of Vancouver. Greg is the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. That is a Dandelion Books publication. And Greg and a caller in Canada, Ramsey, have been talking about a series of things related to Holocaust Orthodoxy, Zionism, the Mearsheimer-Walt Report, and the way in which all of these things are dovetailing in terms of a crisis for the Israeli lobby, which is having more trouble maintaining its grip on the American population, and an American government that may also be finding it more difficult to keep its grip on the American population in the wake of what is happening in the Middle East, in the wake of the Minneapolis bridge collapse, in the wake of what we're now finding out about hedge funds and the subprime mortgage crisis, as it in turn relates to hedge funds and other things going on in the financial markets that suggests that a large amount of debt, both public and private, is about ready to come crashing down on all of us. Greg, as you and Ramsey continue talking about some of these things, I find it striking that at least a few folks like Ramsey out there are clearly getting at the bottom of the truth. They're listening to this show. They're reading Finkelstein's book. They're hearing about and reading the Walsheimer or the Mearsheimer-Walt information on the Israel lobby. Is this an indication that the Zionists' virtual monolithic control of corporate media is still not ultimately securing for them a complete suppression of the discussion of free ideas?
Well, I think that the lobby has managed to maintain a suppression of free ideas for quite some time. I mean, there had always been the discordant voices who would point out the genocide in Palestine and the corruption of Israel. But a lot of them were marginalized. They were on the fringes and could easily be silenced or ignored. But with Mearsheimer, Walt, and Jimmy Carter and other people, their great benefit is the reputations that they bring with them. Like, they're not saying anything that hasn't been said by other people. Well, I shouldn't say that. They are saying a lot of things that I guess we've considered new, but the general thrust of what they're saying has been said before, but they're bringing the reputation to it, and this is why the Israel lobby now is having to fight a more overt censorship. I mean, back when I was writing, I mean, I was censored by Conrad Black and David Rattler here in Vancouver. But my case got very little attention. It got some local attention. The journalism schools, some of the local press picked it up, but it died quickly, and nobody really cared or paid much attention to it. But someone like Mearsheimer can't be silenced quite so easily, at least not without consequences. And when the Wall Street Journal reports on it and does so in a way that makes the lobby look like the bad guy, I think, you know, we are seeing a change in the tenor of American political discourse where we're going to have things discussed that as few as 5 years ago were not allowed to be discussed. I mean, right now, we're going to have a very, very interesting 10 years in the United States. I don't know what the United States is going to look like in 10 years.
I frankly don't know if we're going to survive the next 10 years, to be honest. In terms, I mean, I guess I'm never noted for optimism, but I look at what is happening and what has happened just in recent months, and I see nothing good out there on the horizon for this country. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that this whole situation that we see brewing leads to some fundamental recapturing of this country as a republic, but I'm concerned beyond belief.
Well, I don't blame you. I think any American would be concerned. But one of the things that I've argued for, and as I say, I'm not sure that it's going to happen or that I've really thought this thought entirely, is that the illusion of the republic has to be exploded. I mean, it's one thing to say, yes, we have a government, yes, we go to elections, and even though people have pointed out that the last election was hacked by the Republicans, and I have firsthand eyewitness account of it being hacked, people still labor under the delusion that they live in the United States of America, and the American public has to be made aware that they don't have a country, and that we have to start over again. I mean, the document that was signed in the 1780s with the Constitution, that no longer applies. I mean, the Bill of Rights, which guarantees freedom of dissent, the freedom of religion, the freedom of the protection against illegal search and seizure, the right to a speedy trial, these are no longer valid in the United States. There is spying on American citizens identical to the sort of spying that took place in Soviet Russia. I lived in Russia under the Soviet Union, and I know that I was being spied on. And I know that because the KGB arrested me. It was a case of mistaken identity. It was a terrible cock-up. But, you know, you walk out of a building, and you know you're under surveillance by somebody. And this is the state of affairs in America. No citizen. In Los Angeles, there are spy cameras on buildings throughout the city such that the Los Angeles Police Department can watch the entire city and know where everyone is going. It is a city under observation. There is no privacy left in Los Angeles. And, you know, you look at the the old 1960s and 70s dystopia movies and series about what would life would be like under a totalitarian regime. Or even a movie like Enemy of the State with Will Smith and Gene Hackman. I mean, these are supposed to be, you know, negative, extreme examples of what our society could become. Well, it is. That's the truth now. Look at the Twilight Zone. Look at the terrorism of our people who are being judged to be enemies of the state or obsolete people. People who are persecuted for having differences of opinion that challenge the government. This is not the stuff of science fiction or even fiction. This is what has happened. And Americans have to understand that they can no longer indulge the fiction that they live in a free society, that they live in the United States of America. Their country is gone. And maybe the next 10 years we're going to see an admission of this. Maybe we're going to see an acknowledgement that America is dead. It has been a corpse for decades, and that someone is going to have to start over again, reconstituting something approaching Republican government and prosecuting all those who brought down the government and brought down the Republic. I don't know how many Americans are in prison right now. I think it's about 11% of the population, one of the highest incarceration rates in the world. And how many of these people are being arrested on petty drug charges or on who really don't pose a great threat to society? Well, why don't we just take prison, empty of it of its minor felons or minor miscreants, and stack it with Zionists, real people who have committed real atrocities against our freedoms, like Abraham Foxman, Alan Dershowitz, the president of Harvard, Rove, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Feith, Bolton, the whole Gonzalez and John Ashcroft. These are the people who should be in prison. And there's going to have to be some means to try these people and send them to prison. But as yet, there is no such organization, because the very institutions that would do this are the same ones that are essentially sold out to the Israel lobby. So you're caught in a catch-22 here. What do? Well, you have to start over. You have to supersede the system. If the system is sick, then you go outside the system. And I'm not sure how this is going to work out, but, you know, Americans are going to have to decide how these people are going to be tried. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the United States perhaps even fissure and to create more than one United States country. I mean, so many countries in the U.S. want nothing to do with the Jesus freaks in the Deep South that put George W. Bush into power. You have a lot of informed people New England and the upper Pacific coast. They could probably form their own country. I mean, is the United States defensible as a country anymore? And I think that's one of the issues that many people are going to have to start debating.
You're identifying something, Greg, that's quite fascinating to me, because one can argue that the great American Civil War in the 19th century, whatever its merits or demerits, certainly moved the U.S. in the direction of a more centralized power structure. I think that this is why Thomas DiLorenzo has referred to Abraham Lincoln as the great centralizer. It seems to me that if there is to be yet another American Civil War, as you've suggested on this show before, and I think there's a lot of empirical evidence, empirical data out there that would support that thesis, that what we could see this time is a devolution away from centralization and toward regionalization and greater accountability.
Well, this is, I kind of think that I would hope so, because if, you know, I've traveled through some of the United States, not a lot of them. I've done the border states and down to California. And you can look at the way the United States really has so many different cultures and different mentalities. It's almost hard to imagine this as one state. Up here in Canada, we've had the last...
We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Greg Felton. Stay tuned.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Greg Felton of Vancouver. Greg is the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. That is a Danny Lamb Books publication. And while we're chatting with Greg, I wanted to mention something that David Goodner posted on Wednesday, August 8th. You can find it at commondreams.org. It's entitled American Genocide in the Middle East, 3 million and Counting. Goodner says that deaths directly and indirectly attributable to the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq have neared 1 million people, a body count higher than the genocides in Rwanda and Sudan combined, according to a new report released by Just Foreign Policy. This brings the U.S.-caused death count in the Middle East to over 3 million people, and that's not even counting fatalities in Afghanistan or Palestine. As David Goodner's post of Wednesday, August 8th, entitled American Genocide in the Middle East, 3 Million and Counting. You can find that at commondreams.org. Greg, as we read through some of those statistics, he mentions that these figures, which cause some degree of controversy as far as how they were compiled and analyzed, nonetheless do not count, in his view, fatalities in Afghanistan or Palestine. Let's talk about Afghanistan a little bit. What is your take on what's going on there?
Well, Afghanistan is, again, this was the first... Hi, I'm here. Is that you, Ramsey?
Yes.
Oh, okay, hi. Do you want to start? I don't mind.
Yeah, if you have another question, Ramsey, that's fine. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to make a comment and have a question,
sure.
And then I'll hang on and listen. So another comment I want to make, that the Jewish people also, through their tremendous influence, use the Holocaust in the culture, like in museums, in movies, and of course in the academic curriculum. And so one question I have for Mr. Felton about what he said last week, because I've listened to him and to you, sir, last week, and he said that, and this is something that I kind of disagree, he said that after 1967 war, where Israel occupied the West Bank, Gaza, Golan Heights of Syria, Egyptian territory, the Sinai, and so on, American Jews felt that they could be loyal to Israel after the Six-Day War, and before that, they were not loyal to Israel, like they were afraid of the dual loyalty. I according to my research, I kind of disagree with that, because if you look at the history, like according to what I've read, the Jewish people always been loyal to Israel, like before the Six-Day War, even before the foundation of Israel, and actually people were afraid of the Jews because they're going to be labeled anti-Semitic and so on. So in my opinion, the Six-Day War didn't really change the situation. Just want to get Mr. Felton to comment on that.
It did in a large sense, because up until that war, even though there were many American liberal Jews who might have supported Israel, they didn't do so openly. Public support for Israel is a very risky thing. And up until that time, there were only three books in the United States about the Holocaust, and they were written by three Jewish scholars. And the Holocaust, to a large extent, really wasn't part of the collective American consciousness. It was a very private thing among Jews, what they went through under Adolf Hitler. But it was something quite different after the 67 war, when Israel did attack Egypt and took over the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, and the Golan Heights. Because at this point, the success of Israel gave it the illusion of being a major player in the Middle East. And it became possible to see Israel not simply as something that is unique, that was sort of a private thing among Jews, but something that could be of an asset to the United States, especially because of the Cold War. And the 67 war had the effect, to a large extent, of redefining Israel in the mind of America. And because of that, we had the ability of Jews publicly to support Israel without feeling that they were somehow being less than American. Now, I could perhaps agree with you that there was a lot of Jews, and liberal Jews, would have supported Israel, but a lot of them didn't. I mean, Jews are not bad people. It's just that certain ones of them have a certain perverse understanding of what it means to be Jewish. And that means supporting a political entity that is essentially a blasphemy of the Mosaic tradition. Because the alleged state of Israel about the God's people coming back to their Century 21 plot, this is not going to happen until the prophet comes down and heralds the coming of the Messiah. Now, that's the standard belief tenet of Jewish faith. And the Jews of Israel, Jews of Europe and North America the Orthodox Jews saw in the state of Israel a blasphemy. And the Neturei Karta, a lot of the Jewish organization in the United States, are some of the most persecuted Jews in America by other Jews because they oppose Israel. But it was Israel's victory in 67 that made it possible for the public displays of support for Israel.
We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Ramsey, stay on the line if you can. We'll be back with Greg Felton. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Be because you can handle the truth.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing how to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power. Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold. With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing how to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power. Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Greg Felton, author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. That is a Dandelion Books publication. That's Carol Adler's company in Tempe, Arizona. We've been talking with Greg about the implications of the Mearsheimer-Walt Report and the attempt to censor these guys on the part of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. We've been chatting about a whole host of other items with him today, including some very, very interesting points raised by Ramsey in Canada in regard to the Holocaust industry and the way in which it has been utilized for all kinds of propaganda purposes. We have referenced some of those portions of the conversation to Norman Finkelstein's book, The Holocaust Industry. Our caller has read it. Greg Felton has read it. I have to admit that I have not yet looked at it, but want to get a copy of it, want to read it in its entirety. And, of course, Norman Finkelstein was unjustly denied tenure recently at DePaul University up in the Midwest for reasons that relate to Alan Dershowitz and the onslaught of the Israeli lobby against truth. or against simple freedom of expression in what was a Jeffersonian republic. Greg, I think Ramsey's gone, and if you didn't feel that you covered his last point adequately, please continue. Otherwise, we can hit Afghanistan. Pick your poison.
We can talk about Afghanistan, because I was going to cite the sector from my book about this, but I think I've covered the point quite clearly. But I do want to talk about Afghanistan, because I'm very interested in the way that the New York Times and other members of the official press are covering this issue. If you look at the way the U.S. is looking at this, we have this war that is being fought in this faraway country that ostensibly was a good war, and that this war somehow went bad. And this is the piece by David Rota and David Sanger in the New York Times on yesterday. Was it today the 12th? No, yesterday was on Sunday's paper. And this is a common theme that I'm finding most quite common among a lot of so-called experts in the field about what happened to Afghanistan. Because ostensibly, the U.S., according to the theory, had a good reason for going in there. And really, the great lies of this is that the war in Afghanistan was never defensible, because the United States had no business getting involved in Afghanistan in the first place. And to say that somehow this has gone bad sort of leads us to ask ourselves, well, what was the good reason for going in? Well, okay, well, if we were to ask this question, we would say, well, the Taliban, they were terrorists. We had to get rid of the terrorists. Well, that's not true. The Taliban, frankly, were the U.S.'s best friends for the longest time, because the history of Afghanistan is really one of the saddest examples of Western interference in a Muslim country. I don't want to get too much into the history of Afghanistan, because I have a couple of chapters in my book which does take that into account. But the argument that the Taliban are the enemy is not defensible. After the communist government of Najibullah fell in the late 1980s, the country itself fell into civil war, and there was a group of warlords that were called the Peshawar Seven. They were so called because they met in the Pakistani town of Peshawar, and they organized their affairs. A lot of them fought among themselves terribly. These were a bunch of people like gangsters, a little petty thugs, and who thought, oh, well, we're going to fight over this particular territory, and we want power, we're fighting. It was horrible. And up until about the mid-1990s, Afghanistan was ungovernable. And the Afghani people were some of the worst victims of this, the average citizens. And out of nowhere comes this group led by Mohammad Mullah Omar, with this group called the Taliban. And they were going to bring order to Afghanistan. Admittedly, it was a very cruel order. It was repressive. It was hyper-religious. It was tyranny. It was despotism. It was a repression. That's something we wouldn't even consider here, although a lot of Christians in the White House are pretty much of the same mentality for their religion. But the problem for the United States was that here they had a country that was torn up with civil war, but which they needed to approve a pipeline across the territory between, because Afghanistan sits between Turkmenistan and Pakistan. And the great pipeline that was being built from Turkmenistan had to cross Afghan territory. And the U.S. needed permission from the government of the day to do this. Well, the Taliban was the government, or turned out to be the government, after 1994. And the United States loved these guys. Well, not love, but they kind of liked them, because they promised something that the other peoples, the other warlords, could not promise, and that was stability. They promised a quiescent political culture. And that's something that the Americans needed. Because if you know anything about oil politics, you need a quiet culture where you can conduct business. And you can't do that if you're killing everybody. Because you build a pipeline, it'll get blown up the next week. And so the United States unofficially supported the Taliban. And they supported them, although not publicly. I mean, they were criticizing them for this, that, and the other thing. But the American government really wanted the Taliban to work. And the American State Department had no problem with the Sharia law or whatever the Taliban wanted to do to their own people. They didn't care. And this is typical textbook American petropolitics. This is consistent with everything the United States has done in the Middle East going back to 1932. The U.S. cares nothing about the people of the Middle East or any country that happens to have a raw material the U.S. economy needs. The Americans prop up the tyrant. They take the resources out of the ground, or in this case, from one point A to point B across the territory, and that's all they need. Well, the problem is the Taliban couldn't really provide much in the way of stability because they just couldn't do it. And because the Taliban and Osama bin Laden were very close, and because Osama bin Laden was deemed to be a threat to the United States, the Taliban instantly became associated, quite wrongly, as it turns out, with international terrorism, because they have nothing to do with it. But it's Osama bin Laden and the illusion of the great Islamic terrorist threat, which, of course, was promoted and funded and flogged by Israel. Now, the Taliban went from being a bunch of repressive, thuggish guys that were just happened to be our repressive, thuggish guys, so they weren't so bad, into the paragon of absolute moral evil. And because of this, we end up bombing the bejesus out of this country after September the 11th for no other reason than that the Taliban wouldn't turn Osama bin Laden over to the United States. Now, that's the official version. The actual reason was that the Taliban wouldn't approve the pipeline across the country because they had a firm agreement with an Argentinian company called Bridas, and they would not break that agreement to support the CentGas, a Central Asian gas consortium led by Delta Oil of the United States. And so when the United States bombed Afghanistan, they did so not because it was a terrorist state, not because it harbored Osama bin Laden, but because it wouldn't play ball with the American oil cartel. And that's what happened. I mean, it happened to be a convenient excuse that the September the 11th attack happened. And there's no linkage whatever between September the 11th in Afghanistan. It just happened to be one of those great excuses that allowed the United States to destroy a country because it had the temerity to assert its political independence. So when we now look at the war in Afghanistan and its never-ending nature, that, like Iraq, it's a quagmire that America got itself into and can't get out. The United States has diverted resources from this war to Iraq. It has essentially abandoned Afghanistan in preference for Iraq. And we're supposed to think that, you know, if only the United States had prosecuted this war properly, I mean, this could be a good war. But when the push comes to shove, people don't care for the United States. As a matter of fact, there is a movement in Afghanistan to bring back the Taliban government. Not because people love them, but because they did, for the short time they were in power, bring some sort of stability to the country, although not the kind of stability the United States wanted. And so to say that this was a good war gone bad amounts to a gross distortion and a gross misrepresentation of how and why the United States got involved in the first place. And this is why the New York Times is such an awful newspaper. We think of the New York Times as one of the great newspapers of the world. Well, it isn't. It manages to make acceptable things that are manifestly unacceptable. And so to look at the United States, to look at Afghanistan as some sort of war gone bad is to misrepresent and misstate the very purposes of the United States getting involved in the first place. And so the United States, what's happening here is that New York Times is engaging in useful lying because it will not state openly that the war was wrong to begin with. And the United States is suffering a tremendous, suffering casualties. That the country itself is ungovernable, not because of poor U.S. funding of the war, but because the war should never have been fought in the first place. And, of course, let's not forget that Hamid Karzai, who is nominally the president of the country, used to be a consultant for Union Oil of California. And I think, you know, that goes a long way to stating just how corrupt that the United States position in Afghanistan is.
Well, you know, Greg, listening to your conversation with us this morning about this New York Times piece from yesterday on Afghanistan, it seems to dovetail with what some of these Democrat presidential contenders are saying. On the one hand, they're critical of the Bush-Cheney intervention in Iraq, but then they seem to return to the theme of, well, if you know, we would have confined our intervention to Afghanistan and to the Afghan-Pakistan border where the real terrorist action is. So it seems that this New York Times theme is something that's creeping into, for example, the campaign rhetoric of Obama.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why Obama
is... Okay.
Obama is quite an embarrassment because Obama was supposed to be the great, you know, the great shining lights of the Democratic Party. Because he's Muslim, he could be the first, you know, person to get into power that would perhaps challenge the Israel lobby. But no, Obama is really a very, very cruel joke. He's like a lot of Democrats. He's bought and paid for by the lobby, and he's not going to do anything that's going to get him into trouble. And so, Obama might be wanting to might use the war in Afghanistan for political purposes, but beyond that, there's not a lot that he's going to say that's going to get, you know, that's going to be of much use. He's going to play the exploitation game just like everybody else is.
Well, Greg, what do you make of the fact that in today's London Times Online, there's someone by the name of Fran Yeoman who has a post entitled Britain's Frontline Soldiers Have a 1 in 36 chance of dying on the Afghan battlefield. Does this have something to do with what seems to be the new prime minister's move toward eventually getting British troops out of the region?
It might be. I mean, George Brown, who's the new prime minister of England, looks like he's sort of cut from the same cloth as Tony Blair. I mean, Blair was essentially an avid sycophant and cheerleader for George Bush. And now we see in the latest pronouncements, we have George Brown making the same pro-Israeli stock phrases that leads one to wonder whether the British is also, the England is really, even is it really so thoroughly occupied that it can't articulate a national voice for its own foreign policy. I think the British want to get out of Iraq, they want to get out of the middle, out of Afghanistan, but they've invested so much of their political capital that they can't really back out without tremendous loss of face. And this is, again, what happens when you start fighting a war for reasons that are inherently irrational. And this is exactly how the United States got swallowed up in Vietnam. I 1 in 36 chance of dying,
I'll read a little bit of this since I know you don't have it in front of you. This is the Times Online coming to us from the UK today, Fran Yeoman's post. Britain's frontline troops in Afghanistan are being killed at such a rate that were it to continue, 1 in 36 would not survive a six-month tour of the country. In Iraq, as many as 1 in 100 of all service personnel could die during a six-month stint. If the death rate there continues as it has in the past month, the Ministry of Defense confirmed that a serviceman from the 1st Battalion, the Royal Anglian Regiment, was killed on Saturday during an attack on a patrol base in Helmand Province. His death brings to 7 the number of British troops in Afghanistan killed in action or from wounds sustained in battle since July 12th. This is compared with a monthly average of 0.7 since the conflict began in November 2001. All seven fatalities were members of a 1,500-strong frontline force primarily charged with fighting the Taliban. If the death toll continued at this rate, 42 battle group personnel would be killed in the next 6 months, and a frontline soldier embarking on a typical tour of duty in the country would stand a 1 in 36 chance of being killed. That's the basic synopsis of it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the British are in serious difficulty because, you know, the country has been so aligned with George Bush. I don't know how they're going to extricate themselves and sort of articulate some manner of independent policy. But quite frankly, a lot of people are getting out of Afghanistan, largely because Afghanistan does not seem to be nearly as important as Iraq for the great so-called war on terrorism.
We'll be back with Greg Felton. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're in the last minutes of our conversation today with Greg Felton. Greg is from Vancouver. He is the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. And in our conversation with him, we've covered a series of things today with special reference to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and their recent censorship of Dr. John Mearsheimer and Dr. Stephen Walt. Mearsheimer and Walt, respectively, represent the University of Chicago and Harvard, have written a post on the Israel lobby, which appeared last year in the London Review of Books and caused quite a controversy. And Mearsheimer and Walt have a new book coming out that will be with us approximately 1 month from today. And I hope that everyone gets a copy and reads its contents, because as Greg has outlined for us today, that Mearsheimer-Walt report is absolutely seminal in breaking what has been, virtually monolithic control of the American academic process and the American foreign policy institutional scene on the part of agents of the Israeli lobby. The cracks in the canvas, folks, are starting to appear. And this Mearsheimer-Walt report and the outlandish censorship of these gentlemen on the part of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs at the behest of people like Abe Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League should be abundantly clear to us by now in terms of its larger meaning and its motivations. But take heart, I think Dershowitz and Abe Foxman and some of these other folks, as well as John Hagee of Cornerstone Church here in San Antonio, are beginning to lose the debate. They're losing traction despite their millions of dollars and despite the powerful connections that they have in government and in media. Nonetheless, more and more of us are coming to see that they are taking this country down the wrong road. The bridge collapse in Minneapolis, the collapse of American foreign policy in the Middle East, the shaky character of the American financial markets and world financial markets in the wake of the expose that has been done on the subprime mortgage loans and what that has done to all kinds of people in regard to foreclosures, in regard to bad investments, and destroying the economic and financial and cultural lives of many people. We might ask the question, who's behind it? Cultural declension, economic collapse, military catastrophe, overexpansion of military empire, the denial of First Amendment rights at home. What's the common thread running through all of this? Greg Felton identifies it for us today as the Israeli lobby, and I think that he's exactly right. Greg, we just got a minute to go here. Where are you headed from here in regard to what you plan on doing in the next week or so?
Well, the next week or so, I'm sending off a copy of my book to John Mearsheimer, and I'm preparing an economic essay. There was a fascinating piece written up here in the Toronto Globe and Mail. It's remarkable for its sheer stupidity. it's one of these columns that you have someone who has nothing to say and spends a lot of time saying it. This man decided to take issue with one of the fringe parties up here in the country. It's called the Canada Action Party. It's a nationalist party. It opposes globalization, it opposes continentalism, and essentially puts Canadian sovereignty ahead of anything else. They have a lot of good points of view, and they're not stupid people. But as far as the popular vote goes, they're very, very small. And so what this man, Neil Reynolds, has done is he sets up about seven paragraphs, he discusses their points of view, says what they believe, and then out of nowhere dismisses them as cranks and goes on a rant, and does so in a manner that does more to enhance the reputation of the Canada Action Party than anything else. But what disturbs me about this the column is that it represents the state of into which journalism is.
See you tomorrow.
It's true.